was a disappointing year for our national rugby teams. The All Blacks losing three tests and most notably completely outplayed by France and Ireland, and the Black Ferns thrashed by England and France on their Northern Tour. In August, before the Northern Tour, New Zealand Rugby extended All Black coach Ian Foster's position through to the World Cup in 2023. NZR is also still to complete the $387 million deal with the private equity firm Silver Lake, which it sold to provincial unions as the financial saviour of the sport at all levels, but which has been challenged by the New Zealand Rugby Players Association, and it's proposed an alternative deal using local investors. And there are rising concerns globally over the prevalence of post-career neurological conditions in former players. This year, former All Black Carl Heyman, just 42, has been diagnosed with early-onset dementia and probably chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. He has joined the legal action being taken against World Rugby. I first asked NZR Chief Executive Mark Robinson whether, given the All Blacks' disappointing performance on the Northern Tour, the extension of coach Ian Foster's appointment through to the World Cup was premature.
No, we don't think so, Catherine. We obviously had a lot of information at the time to make that decision. We saw some, outstanding performances through the middle of the year. Obviously, the performances near the end of the year were disappointing, and the team and management and wider organisation are working really hard now to understand how we can improve in those areas. We've already seen, with the decision to appoint Joe Schmidt, that we're, recognising these opportunities to improve. And we'll continue to do that review through into next month and see what else we can learn from that Northern Hemisphere tour especially.
Kiwi Joe Schmidt, of course, a very successful coach of Ireland. More of a backroom role, I think, in his appointment to the All Blacks coaching team here. But back to the question of the head coach, is there any way to revisit that decision if next year's performances are perhaps equally disappointing? Or is it impossible now to change the coach before the World Cup?
Oh, look, Catherine, we're not in that space. We're really focused about, like I said before, about what we can learn from the review that we're working through at the moment. The feedback on Ian at the middle of the year and through what we've seen so far of where we're at with this review is really, really strong. And we're just working through trying to understand what more we can do to support the environment and help it improve. So that's what we're focused on into next month and beyond, really.
Do you set KPIs for the head coach and the coaching team?
Yeah, there are, like anyone in our organisation, there are expectations around performance and for the All Blacks environments and all of our national teams, they're pretty public, aren't they, in terms of the expectation around winning. So, but there are broader things that have happened in that environment in terms of growing a wider leadership group, building and developing the management team. There's a lot of new people come into that environment over the last 12 to 18 months. That behind the scenes, I think people have got to appreciate we're building as well. So whilst there's certainly been some performances that could have been better, at the same time we've seen some good things, and we know that there's things going on behind the scenes in terms of building capability, building depth in the squad that are always happening as well.
What about the performance of the Black Ferns this year? Typically this is a world champion side. Why do you believe its results and performances were so poor on that Northern Tour?
Well, look, I think the first thing has to be made is that we take the performances of all our national teams incredibly seriously, and we want them to do, as well as they possibly can on the international stage. And as I said, the expectation around winning is always very strong. But I think we have to accept in this particular environment and with this team that there's been very limited ability to play international rugby, or any rugby for that matter, even domestic rugby, in the last 2 years. And so that's clearly had an impact. It's clear that, there are teams, particularly England and France, who are developing full-time programs with full-time professional domestic leagues as well that they're benefiting from. So we've come back from the Northern Hemisphere with a huge amount of resolve in this area. We believe we can improve some areas incredibly quickly. And that's what the review is looking into in more detail at the moment. Similar to the All Blacks, we'll get more feedback on that into next month. And it's our responsibility to move on that very quickly and provide the resource where we can to help improve the team.
fitness was an issue, preparation was an issue, it seems, and certainly those performances well off what is expected of a typically champion side. Obviously, they had the disruption of the pandemic, but so too did those Northern Hemisphere teams. And does this indicate a growing gap between the investment their unions are making in now fully professional players and what our players are dealing with here?
Well, there's two parts to that, Catherine. I think there is a difference between the amount of rugby that was played through the pandemic in the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere with regards to women's rugby was a significant difference. So that's the first thing. But you make a fair observation around the second part of your question to do with resourcing. And we've been, you know, reasonably clear that we have had to make some really, really challenging decisions around investment choices, but we've also been hampered with COVID as well in this space. So we are working really hard to obviously grow our commercial revenue as quickly as we can so that we are able to make investment choices into other areas of the game, such as the women's game and areas like the community game, as well as areas like technology, for that matter, and safety that we care an awful amount, about. So there are all areas where simply we need to find more resource. And it's fair to say at the moment that the Northern Hemisphere, you know, have had, you know, by virtue of the private equity deals and the work they're doing with CVC, are making or do have the ability to invest in those areas more.
We'll come back to the finances in the moment. Obviously, it's an ongoing subject of discussion. What is New Zealand Rugby doing about the very public and quite shocking claims made by a player on Facebook, Te Kura Ngata Irangamata, that she had essentially a nervous breakdown on tour and about the way she was spoken to by the head coach?
Oh, look, you know, anyone in our environment that is having experiences that, you know, cause them any form of stress or discomfort, we obviously take incredibly seriously. You know, we pride ourselves on the quality of our environments, and it's a real point of difference for our teams, both at international level and through Super Rugby. So we take those allegations and comments really seriously. We are, as we speak, setting up and finalising a terms of reference and putting together a panel, an independent panel, which will have the appropriate skills, diversity and background to be able to look into these allegations and look at the environment more broadly. So we're taking action very, very quickly. We'd like to have that up and running before Christmas, and similar other pieces of work in this area, hopefully have more information early in the new year.
Is that a general investigation, though, or is it specifically into some of the claims that were made and some of the more egregious comments that are alleged?
Oh, I think it'll be a combination, really. Obviously, we want to look, when we have comments made like that, at the broader culture and some of the wider environmental aspects of the of the culture and the team will certainly be things that we look at.
Where is the deal with Silver Lake at? It's a large sum of money. You had certainly promoted it as being essential and in some ways the lifesaver to turn around the financial circumstances, not only of New Zealand rugby itself, but obviously these areas of the sport, by your own admission here, that are not getting the support that they need, being the grassroots and the women's game in particular. It was progressing along, you had the associations on board, now there is this pause and it's back to the table, particularly after the Rugby Players Association put up an alternative proposal. Where is it at?
So we are making progress. I can appreciate that there are, you know, it has been slow. But we are moving forward. We've had, you know, the dialogue with the RPA, with our provincial unions. We've provided them an update and shared where we're getting to, and we'll continue to move that forward. Silver Lake remain very patient with this, and we'd like to think we can still, you know, conclude a deal in this area. We did meet, as you know, with the board and suggested a path forward here where we will appropriately resource the commercial area of New Zealand Rugby effective immediately to go out and begin some of this work that we would do under a commercial co anyway. So it's not the establishment of a commercial co, but it is more appropriately resourcing the areas of technology, the human resources, and a whole range of other areas that will help us start moving in this direction, because we believe there's a couple of reasons we have to do that. One is that we aren't moving as quickly as what other parts of the world now are in terms of transforming their revenue profile, and we need to get on and do that quickly. And the other reason is we've had really exceptional, organic commercial growth between this year and next. And we see there's an opportunity, if we invest appropriately now, we can really continue to grow that into 2023 and 2024. If we sit back, though, and are unable to do anything in this space, we feel that we and the game ultimately will be compromised. So we feel the time's appropriate to move on that now.
Is New Zealand Rugby giving any consideration at all to the alternative proposal that was put forward by the New Zealand Rugby Players Association, Chair David Kirk and Forsyth Barr, which was to use perhaps private capital to try and achieve the same thing as you were endeavouring with Silver Lake? Is that being given any consideration?
Oh, look, with what we're working through at the moment, without being able to go into too much detail, is that I think all parties understand now that Silver Lake have a great skill set and capability in this area, and they're a partner that we would also like to work with us in this area. And the basis of the deal, although being revised in recent times, is very, very similar to what was initially proposed. So apart from a few tweaks that we're working through at the moment. So that's not so much on the table now. We're working more in line with Silver Lake being the partner and a few variations around that.
They've just bought a stake, I understand, in Australia's Professional Football League. Are they staying interested? Is there a risk that they walk away from this, or are the assurances you are giving them about the essence of the deal remaining the same keeping them on board?
Oh, look, as I said earlier, they remain incredibly patient through this process. What I described before about New Zealand Rugby taking some resource now to apply into the commercial side of our teams and ramp up the investment there, Silver Lake will stay close to some of the work we're going to do there. We'll use them as an advisor and someone to sense check the work we're doing there. So they support what we're doing there, even though it means that they are not a direct investor into the commercial co as such. They remain an incredibly interested party. We've developed some really strong relationships across the game with Silver Lake, and I think they want to see us succeed. So now at this stage, as I say, we're all very committed to trying to work together.
Another story that is continuing to grow in focus is this business of post-career head injuries. It's only deepening. What impact has Carl Heyman coming forward with this story had at New Zealand Rugby?
Oh, look, similar, as I said earlier on, to any person in our environments that is suffering, we have a huge amount of care and concern for. So, I know Carl personally. I played with and against him for many years. I toured with him as an All Black, and he's a fantastic guy and was a wonderful player. So he's certainly someone that we care about, and was an amazing All Black as well. So so first and foremost, our thoughts are with him around that and what he's working through. We, I guess, as we've always said, are working incredibly hard in this space and are doing a lot of work with World Rugby, especially and on our own, to research and investigate and understand all we can in this area. Some of the work we've done has obviously been very public around the work we've done in the Otago community rugby area this year. We've had the Black Ferns involved in a head impact study throughout November, and we've had various exercises in Super Rugby as well. So absolutely, it's a key priority for us. The absolute number one priority around player and participant welfare is very important to us, and we'll keep investing in that area. It's another area, to be honest, as I said earlier, Catherine, where in terms of safety and wellbeing, having the resource behind us and the technical expertise to look at this more through a partnership with an investor could help us, go ahead more quickly in that space too.
There are New Zealanders, Carl Hammond's one of them, who are party to the legal action being brought by former players against World Rugby and two national unions. Now, were it to be successful, certainly those players and their legal representatives that we've spoken to say success will be two things. It'll be getting changes that will have a material impact on the future of players, And second, it'll be support, some kind of support for those who are suffering neurological conditions, very highly likely to be linked to their sporting career. If that case is successful, it must have been flagged or being flagged with you as a future risk if players' concerns are not addressed. What is your position on that legal action and its implications for unions?
Oh, we've said all along, Catherine, we can't speculate or comment on an overseas class action like that outside of our jurisdiction, and something we're not party to. What our commitment is, as I said before, is on the research side, trying to understand and education side as much as we possibly can, and we're taking really active steps around the shape of the game. Issues such as formats, laws, law reviews and trials, where we can look at the amount of contact in a game. We're also looking at the training load and trainings and the amount of contact that is had in our professional training environments, and reviewing those protocols as well. So that's really where our focus is at the moment. We are, in constant dialogue with not only the experts we have at our disposal in terms of our organisation, but also talking to players like people like the Players Association, who obviously also have an active interest in this area, and looking to always collaborate and see what we can do to improve this space.
Is any consideration being given at least to a fund supporting former players with early onset neurological problems?
Oh, look, we are... as I said earlier, we are working really hard with all the experts that we can, and having a lot of discussions with our board and executive teams around the measures we might take here to look at this in the future. We're certainly not sitting back and turning a blind eye to this. It is something that comes up incredibly regularly, and we have people working on regularly as well. So there's a whole wide range of things being considered at the moment.
We've talked about the concern for players. One wonders whether players, and even if it has not been, pinpointed down to a precise link in each and every case, we're in a situation where you have got players who are suffering, some of them at a surprisingly young age. Is there a fear that were there to be a fund to support these former players, that would be seen as some kind of concession of liability? Does that fear limit actions that NZR could take?
No, I don't think. I think we're just at a stage in this overall, journey and pathway in terms of trying to understand this and find the most effective ways of responding to the challenge of considering a wide range of options. There are a whole lot of ideas coming forward. Catherine, you raised one around funding. There are lots of different things that feed into this in terms of preventative and responding to challenges, and ways of resourcing that. So, I don't think that's the case at all. I just think we need time. We're always working at it. And at the moment, we're certainly playing a leading role in that, and we'll continue to do so.
And that is Mark Robinson, who is the Chief Executive of New Zealand Rugby. Big year they have got coming up next year, that is for sure.